Unreal. Uncensored. Unradio. CliffCentral.com.
Leadership Transformation Platform from 12 to 3 every Monday. GMT plus 2. If you're listening anywhere outside of South Africa. So it's really great having you with us. And this portion, the next half hour, is about transformation. And we have our own local transformation issues, Alice, Louis. We know that. And we discuss them as well on this specific platform. But we have global transformation issues happening. And what struck me recently, certainly end of last week, was just the media is transforming. Now, we have Alice with us. We can easily take him for granted. But here's a man who ran the largest financial daily in South Africa, the Business Report. And you were in that industry for many years. You were the editor and deputy editor a short while for about 6 years. And before that, journalist in New York. So you've been engaged with the media for all of your life.
But, pretty much, yeah.
But that's changing.
Absolutely. And that's why I'm here.
And then what you did was, Alice, you left this, I won't call it a cushy job because it's tough to be an editor of a paper. You never sleep, you never go away.
In this country in particular.
Yeah, very, very tough. But you left the solid job of being an editor of the largest daily financial, and you've started what we call, Candid Media Group.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why did you start that, and what's it about? And then let's come back to what's happening in the media space. Because I want us to look at, well, yeah, I chatted to you on the phone last week briefly, and you just randomly mentioned 5, 6, 7, 8 different areas of the media industry that's transforming. Mm-hmm. It just naturally flowed, and that's where I want us to get to.
No, look, Candid Media is a very interesting business, you know, from my perspective, because it represents a look at what potentially is a huge gap in terms of what's next in the media field. And really, the issue is around content. We spoke earlier, those who were tuned in, about creativity and being an artist. Mm-hmm. You know, pretty much everyone has something to say. And the question is, how do you say it and when and what tools do you use, especially in this time when you've got social media and so forth, you know, the tools that are now available. So Candid Media is basically looking at equipping individuals, organizations with content creation capabilities. Mm-hmm. But not just to create content that sits on a website, but mm-hmm. content that, you know, can drive conversations, that content that can also be used to convert people to become, you know, clients and customers, so to speak.
Okay.
So that in essence is what we're looking to do.
So a big change for you personally, transformation for you personally as a human being has always been in the, what do you call the conservative media space, or the, well, what's a nice way of coining it now?
The mass media,
but it's, yeah, it's more your traditional media.
Mainstream media,
that's where you spent, and now you've jumped into trying to figure out this new world of where media is going. Let's compartmentalize.
Mm-hmm.
In what areas would you say media is transforming? Let's just unpack that, and then we can zoom into each of them because we have 25 minutes to cover.
Yeah, it's interesting because in the South African context, we often talk of transformation, you know, from a socio-political standpoint.
Yeah.
And of course, there's been a huge push to ensure that the newsrooms reflect, you know, the demographics of the country,
yeah,
you know, whether you're talking at the reporter level or at the leadership level. So I've been at both the spectrums because this is where I started my journalism career. But, you know, where are we in terms of, you know, seeing that socio-political dimension of transformation?
Mm.
I think it's a debatable issue. As a practitioner, I would say that obviously there's still more work that needs to be done, partly as a result of what we've seen happen in the newsrooms, where a lot of talent has had to go because of economic pressures, you know, that media organizations face. So there's now a much more acute need to bring in, you know, young people who perhaps have an understanding of this new media world that's emerging. But at the same time, that's creating tension because, you know, while you're bringing these new skills, you're also doing away, getting rid of the expertise and,
yeah,
you know, the brain trust in terms of people that can mentor and that can guide and help raise the standard of our journalism.
Okay, so the socio-political side is an important transformational issue, certainly locally in South Africa. And we could talk about that the whole half hour in a way.
Totally.
But you went through that. You had to employ to reflect the change in the country or the demographics, and you had to balance expertise, because journalism, that's what forms our opinion about very important people in society. It's a young journalist who's writing about Zuma or about Julius Malema or about a CEO, and that person forms my opinion of that specific. It's a very important part of our world.
Absolutely. I mean, the weird thing is that as a society, we look at journalism as being a responsibility for the companies that, you know, media companies that run these newspapers and electronic media and so forth. But I think every member of society should be interested in the state of journalism, because it speaks to, you know, the vibrance of our democracy, and also speaks to, you know, accountability in terms of holding, you know, people to account, especially, you know, government. But if we see this bifurcation that's happening in the newsrooms, where a lot of talent is being lost, I think it's concerning. For companies, it may not be such, because, you know, obviously there's a whole lot of short-term thinking when the economics is involved. I mean, you're looking at, you know, how best you can, you know, cut costs and get to that immediate end result. But in the long term, you know, we're all going to struggle. We're all going to suffer, because what you find is that, you know, not the right questions are being asked. And therefore, a lot of things, you know, would go unreported, because, you know, it takes years to fully be very adept in terms of understanding, you know, what are some of the things that you address with, say, the, you know, the governor of the Reserve Bank, you know, what would you address with, you know, the finance minister, other than the sort of peripheral stuff that, you know, everyone talks about.
So while we transform socio-politically, there's other transformational issues that are impacting on the media industry. It's almost like, I don't think that the media industry almost have time to deal with local transformation issues. Now you have so let's look at the other component, like social media. That must hugely impact the media industry at the moment. Let's look at that for a moment.
Okay.
So we've got to deal with our local stuff, but the global shifts are not waiting for our local transformation issues.
Yeah, I'll say those are the business shifts, you see. So you move from the socio-political side of things, which obviously has a lot to do with our history and our legacy, and then you have to then look at the economic, the business side of media.
Yeah.
So that is shifting quite rapidly.
Yeah.
And in a way, it's also what's creating the sort of, you know, fundamental problem where, you know, as organizations, media organizations look to fight for survival, you know, in turn, inadvertently, of course, maybe they turn a blind eye on, say, how to capacitate people, how to grow the right pipeline of, you know, reporters, you know, leaders and so on. But social media is just one aspect of what, you know, has come to bear on the industry. I mean, the other issue, of course, is the, you know, the news dynamics in terms of what constitutes news today, you know, with fluidity that we see being driven by, you know, social media, of course. So the tools that are at our disposal, you know, as media organizations, are also the same tools that are now at everyone's disposal. So you yourself could be your own media channel. So you have this, you know, growing conflict that's emerging, which is, as far as I'm concerned, I think it's positive, where individuals, you know, groups, communities can be now empowered to have their own voices without necessarily having, you know, a media organization intermediating between, you know, the message and the audience.
Yeah.
So that's what, you know, I think things like social media have allowed or are allowing to happen. But the question is, how do legacy media companies, you know, operate in this place, in this space, you know? And it's a challenge.
Yeah, it must be a huge challenge. So news break on social media. They don't break on tonight's 8 o'clock bulletin on ETV. And by the time it gets to...
Which is probably a talent issue there, you know, again.
Okay.
Do you have enough capacity to dedicate you know, reporters to investigative work, you know, which might not pan out with, you know, the story that you possibly were looking for. So there's a lot of investment that goes into those sort of things. But again, social media is leading and legacy media is following.
It's leading. Why? Because you and I are now reporters, because we have cameras on our phones, because we have Twitter accounts, because we have Facebook accounts, because we're the witnesses.
We have our own audiences, you see.
Yeah.
The interesting thing is that I find that my Twitter following, for example, just using one measure, you know, has been growing quite phenomenally ever since I left my, what you call the cushy job, which wasn't that much cushy.
Yes.
But that, again, just goes to show that what social media tools give people, they give you the ability to create influence.
Yeah.
And also develop opinions. And if people find those to be interesting, then therefore they'll follow you.
Yeah.
And therefore you have that audience, which pretty much you can take with you wherever you go. That's the power that social media has given people.
Mm. But how else is it impacting? And what else is impacting media? Because I'm thinking very simply. There was a time when people actually gear themselves for the 8 o'clock news.
Yes.
On television.
Yes.
So newspapers we know have been dropping in readership for years now, 3-4% a year, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
The television media is following suit, but they're a little bit behind the curve because maybe it's visual and whatever the reasons may be. But still now, if I think when last I, actually sat and watched an 8 o'clock bulletin to find out what's going on in the world, it's been a long time.
Yeah, because you're getting your news on social media.
Correct. I know what's happening already on News 24.
And I can set up my own news feed in terms of what I want to hear, you know, on apps like Flipboard, for example, which, you know, I can customize to give me the news that I want, you know. So, I mean, that's what's impacting media to a great extent. It's the technology.
Technology. Okay.
As much as, you know, the invention of the printing press, you know, it sort of set the course of history, you know. And so are these new technologies that are emerging, you know. And we're going to also be struggling with how we define, how they redefine how we engage with things like news, for example. Because the question, as I said earlier, what is news in this day and age?
Yeah,
you know, when you hear on social media or see, you know, Prince trending, that Prince has died, you pretty much have the full story.
Yeah.
But then if you're looking for, you know, reporting behind that news, in some way you still would gravitate towards a newspaper, but not as an immediate,
in-depth analysis and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But are we not saying now, in terms of media, and we'll look at the impact on leadership in a moment and bring the old man in, because this is important for leaders. I mean, leaders report results. Leaders are more visible than ever before. You know, there's lots of elements here that impact on the leader's life as such. You know, if you look at social media in terms of what you just said, Alice, so maybe there was a time when reporters had to go find what the news is and what is the news that I want to listen to. But now social media tell them. If a story trends on social media, then the news editor knows that's the story we must chase for reporting for tonight, for specific interviews, in-depth analysis, different angles and viewpoints. So in that sense, social media feeds, is it not doing the job for the editor or for the producer or for whoever, the anchor?
In the traditional sense, that's how it would work. But again, you know, just as we think social media is now also, you know, becoming an arbiter of what would essentially end up in the paper, you have what's also called big data, which is also opening a whole new realm in terms of what ends up, you know, being reported. For example, you know, you have platforms like your BuzzFeeds, your Mashables. You know, these are platforms that are just solely online, but they've drilled down in terms of utilizing data to understand what content, for example, is best shareable. What content is best shareable at what times? What content is best shareable, you know, relative to what audience? Because that's the other emerging thing. You not only have technology, you know, coming at us, you know, in such a rapid pace. You also have the accumulation of data, the analytics, which now help people who are at the forefront, who are leading innovation,
to be able to profile.
Hence, you know, if you look at every piece of content now, invariably you'll have at least 5 social media buttons at the bottom, you know, so that it can be shared and it can be spread. So, you know, gone are the days when, you know, you would think, you know, all you do is chase a scoop, you know, an exclusive. Because, again, the information flow is so quick and so immediate. And for companies, media companies, to be able to monetize content nowadays, it takes a far much more than just putting paywalls. You know, it's been proven that the paywalls aren't going to cut it. You know, the most shocking thing for me just recently was to look at the numbers that were reported by Facebook. For the last quarter, they reported something in the order of $5 billion in terms of revenue. But 80% of that revenue was generated through advertising that was solely on mobile platforms.
Oh my goodness. Is the shift that big already?
Huge.
Wow.
So people are asking, PC, desktop, what was unleashed with the advent of the iPad, you know, the advent of the smartphone, you know? So that shows you which direction content consumption is going, okay?
Yeah.
And then the difficulty, though, is that, you know, it takes a new mindset to be able to see those opportunities. Hence, you know, in my own case, I feel that I'm much more in a better space to be able to explore and look quite in-depth in terms of where, you know, the opportunities lie with regards to these technologies, especially for an emerging market like ours.
Yeah, we're talking about the transformation of the media industry, and it's a fast one. I mean, where are newspapers really going? I think they're in danger unless they adapt very quickly, and I don't know exactly how. You'll have a view on that. Television is changing. We've got the smartphone that's, you said, the revolution it unleashed. With the advent of the smartphone and the iPad, or whatever you call them.
Well, isn't it funny, though, that we are on Cliff Central, and it's Garrett Cliff. I think it was one of his first broadcasts, so whatever things he was doing early on when this thing launched 2 years ago this month, to say, you know, he wants to be at the funeral of radio. And so you can just imagine what other medium face a sudden death, and TV is one of them. But you always have this retort that, you know, we are a developing country, you know, there's still issues with bandwidth, you know, the cost of data and so forth.
Yeah.
But the issue is that people aren't looking at what's happening beneath the surface. You know, there's an 80-20 rule here.
Yeah. Louis?
Hold on. Beneath the surface. Thanks, Ellis, for that. We discussed before the issue. A very important leadership issue. In other words, what do leaders do about this revolution in technology? It's one thing to track and keep up with the technological progress, etc. It's another thing, though, to close the tremendous maturity gap that's arising. Everybody's a commentator. Everybody's an expert. For instance, I see in the past we had this tremendous tradition that there was a strongly responsible press. Remember, pro or anti-government, boy, they were... Our press was fearless, and normally it was well-founded, and they closed the loop. Nowadays, you find articles are written, and the journalist makes questions or statements that are pretty emotional and it's acceptable. Now, at one stage, that wouldn't have been acceptable. So I'm worried, from a leadership point of view, people to learn to sift this the drag of the maturity, emotional maturity. And leaders can't just jump and make... We've seen cabinet ministers make incredible emotional statements, and it's acceptable in the media right now, example. And so leaders have a strong responsibility, and you speak of the 80-20 factor here, to immature. You were saying the newsrooms are running empty, basically from those people who can close the loop. So from leadership point of view, people, we can't stop this revolution, but we must learn how to sift.
Totally.
So issues are coming at leaders, government leaders or business leaders, faster than ever before. And they feel they have to respond faster than ever before, and they make mistakes. they say the wrong things, and their reputations suffer, their organization's reputation suffer. Comments on what Louis said there, Alice? I mean, there's so much around
here. No, it's a very critical point in terms of how, what's the difference between news and commentary, because everybody now is a commentator. But, you know, that what you're raising, Louis, you know, takes me to another point here, which is, you know, the transformation also has to encompass what's happening at the places where we think we are training the journalists of the future. Okay, I never went to a journalism school, but I'm not saying or wanting to purport that there's no value in doing that. But the best training that I think there is for any journalist is in the newsroom. But the challenge is where and by whom, when you know, the talent has ran out, you know. So I think it would be good for us to perhaps explore this further and bring, you know, people like Rhodes, you know, people like Monash, who have, or Verts, you know, who have these you know, departments where they're still, you know, purporting to teach journalism. Because, you know, I wonder, for example, how many of the journalism students who will be graduating next year, how many of them even have a blog, you know? I've been invited to speak to some media students in the coming few days. And I'll be looking to understand what, how many of them even have a social media account, you know?
Yeah.
How many of them even know what Facebook is other than just sharing gossip, you know? Facebook, as an example, they've developed something called instant articles, where, you know, any publisher, so to speak, yourself, individual, anybody, can put or place things which instantaneously, you know, run through whatever timelines and connections you have in an instant. And they're trialing this out, going so far as to pay, you know, people to do it. Because they ultimately want to see that, you know, they own the space. As much as Google owned the search space, Facebook wants to own the content space.
Ellis, years ago there was an article about how dangerous knowledge can be. For instance, this writer mentioned an example between a person who qualifies to be karate expert. I speak traditional karate. Takes him 5 or 10 years and thousands of exercises to become there. But a person can almost literally now go and study, read up, and make an atomic bomb without any character.
Facebook.
As example.
YouTube.
You can do that. So what I'm saying is, to fill that, I hope your company also starts addressing that. Mm-hmm. That maturity gap is so important. But again, it falls back on leaders. We can't jump that responsibility.
Well, you know? Let's go there. Let's take a few minutes at the end of this to discuss the impact on leaders.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very particularly. I mean, we know it's changing. We know that the Facebooks and the YouTubes and the Twitters, they're all adamant that they are going to destroy and create that funeral for traditional media and the Cliff Centrals. And I mean, somewhere they'll buckle under the pressure. Somewhere they will. It's starting to happen already. The impact on leaders. So that the media is different. We've spoken the last few minutes on how it's transforming. What is the direct impact on CEOs, on politicians, on educational leaders? Doesn't matter where. Alice, your view.
I think, you know, taking, you know, myself as an example, I think the most important thing that I've thought I needed to do is to be continuously ever learning, you know. And that's what technology allows you to do now, to constantly be engaged, to understand what are the shifts, you know, what are the new trends, and so on, and how then do you evolve your thinking, you know, commensurate with the evolution that's happening in the
and
in the environment.
And how do you apply your values to that?
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. So, I mean, I spoke earlier about, you know, co-evolution, where you as a leader have to evolve in tandem with the, with your environment.
Yes.
Or else, if you don't do that, the environment is continuously evolving. We know that.
Mm.
But then what would happen if you don't evolve is that the environment will evolve against you. And then you become extinct.
Mm.
So already we've seen, you know, this partly explains the sort of shifts that we are seeing, where, you know, all that the media organizations had before was to say, hey, to advertisers, we've got these eyeballs, you know, we've got this audience, therefore it will cost you this much to reach them, okay? But brands now and companies or whoever wants to sell something, you know, can create their own billboards, So they don't need to buy audiences as such, especially when platforms like Facebook are creating audiences that are there and ready to be leveraged. But if you've got the right tools. So I think leaders have to continuously be evolving and learning and developing themselves, but also be willing to try things and be willing to fail. You know, I just can't imagine that there's a legacy media organization which today doesn't have an innovation hub of sort. And that hub has to feature both the millennials, the Gen Zs that, you know, our earlier guests were talking about, as well as people who are highly adept and have years of experience, so as to be able to address some of the things that Lou is talking about.
Ellis, we've discussed often, since you sat in with our various leadership programs, the need for leaders to get to know themselves and to know exactly what the value systems are. So if we just focus on technology and lose that, then we'll lose our whole identity. Because what draws, we had this beautiful discussion with this tremendous woman who created Open Windows, you know, and is driven by her values. Now, in that sense, it's a matter of priority for leaders to understand you have to learn who you are, what you stand for, not just driven by the waves of social media around you. So ultimately, if we speak on social media, we do two things. We reveal who we are, and secondly, we reveal the content we think we're communicating. But who we are, so if I react emotionally, you know, without closing the loop, and all I'm saying is I am a immature person, I'm not a leader. So that part of it concerns me in training a great deal.
So could I say that authenticity of a leader?
Yeah.
If I'm really authentic, I know who I am. Yes, I'm going to maybe get emotional now and then. I'm going to make mistakes now and then. But if I know who I am, I'll stand up or stand, withstand
for
any platform, media platform, whether it's a legacy media platform, whether it's a social media platform. In the end, if I'm real, I'll withstand the winds and the pressures and the stories that break because one of my staff members did something he or she shouldn't have done, or the engagement with customers they suddenly record, you know, in the bank. Or so coming to a leadership point of view, you need to be very mature emotionally, spiritually, and in many other ways.
Totally, I think authenticity is very important, but it's also very important to understand the world around you. Okay, so be authentic, but also be very frank about the things that you don't know, the things that, you know, you're not exposed to.
But don't pretend.
You use the word ever learning. I think it's not just a word. You're saying it's imperative.
Totally. Yeah. Because sooner or later, the environment would expose the deficiencies that are in your leadership. And also your philosophy obviously has to change because, you know, if the environment is changing, there is no way that someone will be out there waiting to see how you evolve. You just get, you know, run over. I mean, that's just the reality of the world we're in. And by the way, I would say, you know, maybe a controversial statement is that if we look at South Africa, we heard how far back we are in terms of our education and learning dynamic. Also, in the terms of social media, how we understand these technologies, I wouldn't be surprised if we 10, 15 years behind. But then that creates an opportunity for those that can assimilate, you know, movements and shifts that are happening to the local question, you know, to succeed.
And the maturity of a leader to admit and realize that any leader these days would be deficient. The world is moving so fast that I don't think there's any leader that can truly handle the openness and the visibility that they're exposed to.
Yeah, there's no place to
things
hide.
Happen too fast.
Yeah.
And I think as a leader, if something happens in your organization that breaks news, that break on social media or whatever it may be, for you to admit and say, listen, this is happening very fast. And no leader can almost cope and handle this. We'll deal with it as best we can. We'll respond in due course.
But the best we can, Adrian, to your point, has to be at recognizing that you cannot apply conventional thinking to non-conventional ways of how, you know, news and the world is evolving. So somehow you have to shift your thinking and make it adaptable to what's happening now.
That is Alison Yandu and then Louis Groenewald with me, and we spoke the last half hour on the transformation platform about what? About the media transforming and the impact on leadership, on leaders in today's world. Man, much more to talk about there. Let's leave the conversation open.
Thanks,
for more in the future. Thank you for joining us. Next up, our leadership in education slot for a half hour. We'll be talking about leadership and education with our special guest. He's been here before, Dr. Sipiwe Mtiane. All about ethical leadership in schools. We feel like we have to close down that conversation more. Stay with us.
Unreal. Uncensored. Unradio.
Cliffcentral.com.